So we're continuing in our series on healing the home. And this lesson, we want to consider the thought of gaining freedom from anger. That we know that there's a lot of different issues that go on in a home that can cause hurt and pain. And sometimes we want to deal with some specific things, but we want to realize that there's a lot of underlying things that are happening too. We looked last week of the thing of bitterness. So that's something that really we need to learn to get out of our homes, because that can cause a lot of trouble. And tonight we're going to look at anger, and anger is definitely related to bitterness, because bitterness, you think, is anger and internalized. What we're going to be talking about more today is anger that's externalized. And so we want to get victory over that. And so, as we begin, just want to give kind of an introductory illustration. And so just imagine if somehow you had some kind of wild creature get into your house. Say if it was like a rabid dog, or say it was like a coyote, or even like a bigger animal, like just say somehow you got like a moose rampaging through your house, right? If that was to happen, right, something like a creature like that gets into your house, right, that would be, for your whole family, that would be like a traumatic experience, right? It would terrorize them. And it's kind of the thing, as a parent, you would do your best, okay, I've got to get this animal out, and got to try to calm down the kids. But having something like that happen, your kids would want to be reassured, okay, that crazy creature is not going to come back into our house again. And so it's something that, as a parent, you'd kind of take steps, okay, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen. And however you would do that, you would take those steps, right? And it's the thing, and until the kids have a point where, okay, this wild beast, until I'm sure that it's not going to come back and do the same thing again, then they're not going to be a place of being able to heal and recover from that trauma that they experienced, right? And so we can kind of picture that in our minds, just what a situation that would be. But really we want to understand that it's not, we generally don't have to worry about that, of a beast coming out from without into our homes and causing mayhem and havoc and trauma. That a lot of times we have to protect our families from the beast within. And that beast within is anger. Anger within ourselves. And that threatens to do the most damage in our family life. That when we exhibit anger, that we can terrorize and traumatize the members of our family. And that's the thing, is that it's like this monster has come into our home, but it's like we change into a different person. And it can be quite scary for kids, and they wonder, okay, is this person suddenly going to show up unannounced once again? And so we want to realize how dangerous that can be. And so if we want the healing process of our homes to begin, then it's critical that we learn to confront and deal with our anger issues. And so it's something that a lot of times we don't think it's as problematic as it is, but it's something that we want to realize that it isn't a good thing to have in our home, and it'll just lead to a lot of trouble if the longer we don't deal with it. And so first off, we want to just get some basic thoughts of what anger is, what it's related to. And so we define anger as a violent passion of the mind excited by a real or supposed injury. And so it is an emotion that we experience. It is a passion, something that is really, when we experience it, it's kind of overwhelming. And it is excited by a real or supposed injury. And it's kind of, when we think of that definition, you think in terms of chemical reactions that occur. Sometimes what they introduce into a reaction is a catalyst that speeds up a reaction, makes it happen faster. And there's different things that may serve as catalysts in developing the reaction of anger within us, but we actually realize that the conditions for a reaction exist without the catalyst. And so that's something we're going to look at a bit later on, is that, yes, this might be the trigger, but that doesn't mean that's the cause. And a lot of times it can be a real or supposed injury. And sometimes someone does something to us and we get angry. Sometimes we can get just as angry over somebody about something, and we may actually be completely mistaken that we have been injured. We take offense where no offense was committed, no offense was intended. But we assume that it is, and we get upset. And sometimes that's a lot of times what happens. We can jump to conclusions and fly into a fit of anger without actually getting the whole picture and realizing that it was a nuclear reaction to something that wasn't even necessary. But there's other terms associated with anger, and they would include fury, which we would define as a storm of anger, and even as madness. And there's sometimes when we get angry that it's almost like we get something happens where it's almost like we talk about seeing red, but it's almost like we black out for a minute and all we have is that fury that comes up within us. Think as well of rage, violent anger accompanied with furious words, gestures, or agitation. And we get enraged at different things that happen. And we're blowing our top, we're at a point where we're out of control. And then wrath is violent anger, vehement exasperation. And usually when we exhibit wrath, we're exhibiting violence of some sort or another. And a lot of times it can be abusive either by word or by action. And so we tend to find many ways to ignore, minimize, or justify our anger. And we can think of that. We think, well, it's not that big a deal. Yeah, I got upset a bit, but I really was mostly under control. And when we say that, we should always ask the people that we're angry to what their thought is. Yes, Caleb? Okay, sure, that's fine. But we tend to ignore it or minimize it. But then a lot of times what we do is we justify our anger. We think that we have a right to be angry, that our rights have been violated, so that therefore it's justified. We often have, sometimes people actually kind of look at it and try to find a scriptural excuse for their anger. They'll say, well, everybody else just gets mad, but I have righteous indignation. And of course, that's usually baloney, but that's a lot of times what we'll try to say. And sometimes we can think, well, this somebody did wrong and I'm rightfully angry at that wrong. And there's we're very good. Like, we don't have to be trained in this. We just naturally, we can always find ways to justify wrong behavior. And especially when it comes to anger, we're always finding a way to excuse it and say, oh yeah, it was justified, or it was worthwhile. Sometimes even in there can be some parents that might say, oh well, anger is really the only way that I can get my kids to do what I want them to do, because they're not going to listen unless I kind of raise my voice and kind of chew them out. And it's kind of realizing that, that that's the only reason they respond that way is because you've trained them to respond that way. It's kind of like someone where he trained his mules to respond to him yelling, that was the only way that they would respond, and so anyone else that couldn't yell as loud as him couldn't control him at all. And so it's kind of, you want to teach someone to respond just in just a basic command in a regular tone of voice. If you're having to yell to get them to do what they need to do, then you realize, okay, I need to change what I'm expecting, so that that's, I don't have to get to that level to get them to go forward. And so we need to come to the realization of the damage that our anger causes in the home. And that's the thing, regardless of however we may think it's justified, we got to look at, okay, what is this doing in my home when I get angry? And I think that is really the impetus to help us realize, okay, yes, this is a problem. I need to start dealing with it. All right, so you got that whole page? Awesome. Okay, so these are from the scriptures. Just going to list some different things that the scriptures highlight, but I think that we can recognize as well from our own experiences. In Proverbs chapter 15, the first part of Proverbs 15, verse 18, it says, "A wrathful man stirreth up strife." And so strife is like contention, fighting, squabbling, arguments. And it says that a wrathful man stirs up strife. And so that's what happens when, and we can think of that at different situations where somebody does something, maybe they were just goofing around, maybe they maybe weren't thinking, but then someone overreacts to that and gets angry and says, "How dare you do that? You dummy, why, how could you do that?" And then, of course, that other person, what happens? It's like, "I'm not a dummy. How dare you call me a dummy?" And so then it just kind of escalates and escalates, right? It gets bigger and bigger because of how the angry outburst got it started. So we recognize that to be true. The next part of that verse, it says, I guess that's not the right verse. But he that is slow to anger, appeases strife. I'm just trying to find the other verse. I'll have to find it later, but anger also leads us to transgression. That it says, "A furious man aboundeth in transgression." And so the reference isn't right there. I'll have to correct that later. But it's the idea that transgression is when we step over the line of what's right. And so when we're angry, it causes us, we know God has sort of basic principles of how we're supposed to live, and so we step over that when we're angry, we're out of control. Okay? And so anger leads us to transgression against God and against our family, because there's things that we do where we step out of line. And so we want to be careful about that. All right. How you doing, Caleb? Are you getting all these down? Okay. Yeah. If you focus front, then that way you make sure you get them. Okay. All right. Angry outbursts as well cause others to lose respect of us. And so we see that in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 9. It says in Ecclesiastes 7 verse 9, "Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools." And so it's saying there that if we're hasty to be angry, that's a sign of foolishness, that we're not being wise in how we conduct ourselves. And so everyone, I think, recognizes when we're out of control, and I think a lot of times when we get really angry, there is a foolishness that is evident. And so, especially when we're trying to work with our children, trying to teach them different things, that we understand that they'll lose a lot of respect of us when we have angry outbursts. And so we want to be wise with that, realize that's what's happening. And this is the thing, is that when we get angry, a lot of times that provokes our children to anger. And that's something, we've looked at that. There's different negative commands in the Bible. Those ones are always very serious ones if we break them. And we think of it, relationship between a husband and a wife, we looked at last time, was it that a husband is not supposed to be bitter against his wife. That always causes serious problems. And for a parent to provoke their children to anger and wrath, that always causes serious problems. And so if we're getting angry, that's going to provoke them to anger. And what the product of that is, it discourages our kids. And you think of it, if someone, a child is trying to do their very best, they naturally want to please their parents, but if they don't do it right and we react to them and call them dumb or useless or something like that, what's going to happen? They're going to say, well, why should I even try anymore? What's the point? And usually what will happen is it will just kind of start giving up. They'll kind of pull back. And if you want to create a rebel, the quickest way to do that is to get angry at them and provoke them to wrath and anger. And we understand, too, that anger drives people away from us, that it scares them. They're worried about what we're going to do. They don't know what... We're so unpredictable that they'd rather stay away from us. It says, Proverbs 21:19, it is better to dwell in the wilderness and with a contentious and an angry woman. That you think of it, you'd rather be out in the bush somewhere than to be with someone that's fighting. It actually talks about another place, it's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a contentious and angry woman. Just kind of the picture of it, it's like you'd rather basically sleep on the roof of your house rather than go downstairs and have to live with someone that's angry all the time, right? And so you're driving a person away by your anger. And then as well, we understand anger is counterproductive. That God says, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. And I think that in the family, that's a very important verse to kind of remember and to recognize its principle, the value of it. But it says there, we're supposed to be slow to wrath because the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. And so you kind of think of it in this way, that you want to develop in children a sense of knowing right from wrong, of doing the right thing, of developing in them character. But it says there, the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God, that it'll actually work against what you're trying to accomplish in that. That you're going to make them react against your anger, they're going to be rebellious. And so it's something that we really want to fight against. But then as well, we want to understand that anger is a snare to our souls. Proverbs 22, verses 24 and 25, it says, make no friendship with an angry man, with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. And so, when we have a problem with anger, it's going to be a snare to our soul. And so you think of it, the devil is always trying to find ways to defeat us, to ensnare us. And so if we're angry, that's always going to be a problem. It talks about another place in Proverbs that if we don't have rule over our own spirit, we're like a city that's broken down without walls, that we're just laying ourselves open for attack. And so we want to recognize the vulnerability that anger gives to us and to our homes. And so we want to realize, okay, with all these different effects, these are not good things. And that's the thing, that any possible good fruit that we might think may come from our anger in maybe the moment, it really is very small in comparison to the long-term negative consequences that come from our anger. And so we want to consider the root causes of anger. Did you get all of those, Caleb? Okay, good. And so too often we blame our anger on everyone else, insisting if they had not provoked us, we would not have become angry. And so that's always a thing. Well, if you hadn't have said this, if you hadn't have done this, if you would have been more understanding or more thoughtful, then I would not have become angry. And it's all your fault. And really, we think about that. Especially as adults. Say if we're in a court of law and we said to the judge that, say we got in a fight, we beat someone up and we seriously injured them. And we said, well, it's his fault because he provoked me. Would the judge say, okay, sure, yeah, you're free to go, we'll put this guy in jail, it's his fault. That wouldn't happen, right? The judge would say, no, you're a adult, you're responsible, you need to control yourself, that this is aggravated assault, you're going to be guilty and sentenced, and you're going to have to bear the consequences of your lack of control. And so we really want to understand that doesn't fly, and we need to stop trying to shift the blame onto everyone else. We want to realize that doesn't work. And we see that such a mindset is an abdication of personal responsibility. And so much, that's what we do, is with not just anger, but so many other things, that we make ourselves into the victim. We basically try to make it look like we don't have any control. That it's like everyone else has to stop being so annoying or frustrating, and then I won't have an anger problem. And it's like, how is that going to actually happen? If just imagine that if you had a problem with road rage, that it's just sort of, well, if everyone else on the road just kind of drove properly, then I wouldn't get angry, right? Well, how are you going to get everybody else to drive properly, right? That's not going to happen. And the thing is, you need to learn how to deal with your road rage so that you're not reacting when people do these things. And so for our own sake, for the sake of others, we have to be able to bring our anger under control. That we don't have an excuse not to do that. That again, that idea that if we don't have rule of our own spirit, we're defenseless. We're leaving ourselves and our family open to attack. And so we want to understand that when we get angry, and this is a very important truth to understand, that we don't get angry because of what's going on around us. We get angry because of what's going on within us. And so really that's where it starts, is kind of evaluate what is going on within me that's causing me to react the way I'm doing, causing me really to overreact, to go nuclear in the situation. That, because sometimes there's things that happen and there's a rational, calm way of dealing with it. And we maybe haven't learned how to do that. And a lot of times what happens too, there's other things going on within us, and we're not dealing with those things properly, and so then we get, somebody does something which really is not that big a deal, but then we just unload on them, and it's really, it's t- totally out of proportion of what they did, and it's because there's all this other stuff that's built up within us that we haven't been dealing with. And so we want to identify that and take responsibility for that. So our internal sources of anger include, first off, pride. And really, if you want to think of a key one, and this in many ways influences a lot of these other ones, is where we have an overinflated view of our own self-importance. Where someone says something to us and we don't think it was said with the right amount of respect, or we just think that this person is not appreciating me as much as they should, and so I am reacting in anger, but it's because of my pride. And so often that's what happens. If someone says something to us, they might make a comment, it might just be in jest, but we're ready to fight over that because of our pride. And so a man's pride is going to bring us low. It's going to lead us to destruction. And so we want to identify that as the root so often of any kind of fight. That it talks about only by pride comes contention. So if we're having fights and strife, and anger is a part of it, but pride is really the root of it. Secondly, we realize that we may have a failure to respond properly to stress. That all of our life, we deal with different stress in life, right? And we have to learn how to respond properly to it. Sometimes what happens is we have taken on too much and we're experiencing overload, right? And what's necessary for us to do is realize, this is too much for me, I need to maybe back off. And again, that's part of our pride. A lot of times we take on too much because we want to show everybody we can handle it, that we're tough. But then, of course, when we get to a point where it's too much, instead of backing off, then what we're doing is we're starting to react to other people because they're adding to our stress level by not doing maybe what we are hoping they would do. And so a lot of it is learning to deal with stress properly, sometimes saying with some things, okay, I just need to let this go, this is not worth getting stressed out about. Other times it's just saying, okay, I need to take certain steps to deal with stress. Maybe I need to go for a walk, maybe I need to just have some kind of activity I can do to calm myself down. That sometimes it can be, even if, say, if you're stressful at work, sometimes driving home it might make sense, okay, maybe I should stop at the road for 5 minutes and just kind of breathe and pray and calm myself down before I come home and get in the home and then start dealing with what might be other stresses in the home. We shouldn't be bringing the stresses of work back into the home. That we need to keep work at work and just deal with life at home. But then as well, anger sometimes is caused by fear or anxiety. Things are happening and we're worried. We of course, we have a desire to kind of control things, make things happen a certain way. And when things are out of control, that upsets us, that puts us on edge. And so then, because we're on edge, then we end up reacting with anger. And so sometimes we need to evaluate that. Okay, what am I worried about? What am I focused on? And I need to just calm down about this. I need to deal with this properly. I need to just seek the Lord's help and His prayer, and so that I can kind of de-escalate that those feelings of anxiety. So then that way I'm not reacting in anger. Sometimes it can be a failure to develop patience. That we realize that we have to wait for stuff. That's just life, right? Good things come to those who wait. And a lot of times, you think of it, when we're little, right, that it's you just think of kids that like to have to sit still for more than 5 minutes. It just, oh, this is so long, this is so boring, and you think they're going to die, right? That sometimes if it's like, if they have to wait 10 minutes longer for a meal, then it's just like the world's going to end, right? But that's like when you're a child, right? When you're an adult, you want to get to the point where, okay, I can wait, I can be patient. And so it's something where we have to learn that. Maybe we need to just go fishing a lot and just kind of just learn how to just sit there quietly, be patient, wait for the fish to come. That there's things in life that when we learn to be quiet, and the Bible actually talks about that we need to study to be quiet. That we learn to just, okay, I can wait. If something's worth having, it's worth waiting for. But as well, sometimes our anger comes because we have unreasonable expectations of others. That we, and this is something especially in terms of our family members, we can kind of expect them maybe to have it all together even when we don't have it all together. To be these perfect little people, even when, like, they're at a stage where, okay, they just haven't developed that yet. And so we really want to evaluate that, because sometimes we have expectations that are unreasonable. It doesn't mean that we should have no expectations, but we want to see, okay, is this actually reasonable? Am I, because that's, again, when we think of that idea of provoking our children to anger, a lot of times it can come when we expect too much of them, more than what they're capable of accomplishing, because they'll get to a point where, okay, there's no way I can measure up to this impossible standard that my parent is laying out for me, so I just feel like giving up. And so, like, and of course that sometimes, it can work between a couple, kind of if one has unreasonable expectations of the other person, sometimes even as a child of the parent having unreasonable expectations too. And so we have to evaluate that. Are my expectations reasonable? Because if they're not, they're going to lead to a lot of arguing and anger. Sometimes it can be frustration with life that we have. And that's the idea. We have sometimes expectations of how our life is supposed to turn out. And when it doesn't turn out the way that we hope that it will, that we just get frustrated. We feel helpless. We don't like where we're at. We want it to change, but it doesn't seem like it's changing. And again, that kind of connects with the idea of patience too. And so we have to learn to deal with the frustrations of life in a healthy manner. And then as well, sometimes our anger comes from guilt or shame over personal mistakes and failures. That there's things that we've done wrong, things that haven't turned out right, mistakes that we've made, and we're upset with ourselves, but of course we can't really get angry at ourselves. It doesn't really do much. And so sometimes we redirect that anger to other people. And it's learning. A lot of times, like, and that's why God wants us to deal with when we do wrong, to get it right with Him first and not have those feelings of guilt and shame, because those really put us in a state of mind that's not healthy. And that can in turn affect our relationships with others. And sometimes things that they do unwittingly actually remind us of the thing that we did that we're ashamed of, and so then we're upset at them for reminding us, even though they may have no clue what we're upset about. And so we need to deal with those things before us and God, and so then that way that's not affecting our relationships. So we see all these things, and so this is something that we can evaluate. Okay, what is actually causing my anger? Where is it coming from? What is the root cause? It's not this person that's doing it. They're not the problem. They're the catalyst, but they're not the cause. that the conditions are already there. If I take out those things in my heart and life that are going to cause that reaction, then I'm not going to be having that problem with anger anymore. So we want to deal with these things and confront them and just take responsibility of what's going on within us. So finally, we want to consider steps to gaining freedom from anger. And that's the thing, is we're not just looking at anger management, right? We want to actually get freedom from it. We want to have it so it gets out of our homes. It says in Psalm 37, verse 8, it says, "Cease from anger and forsake wrath." And so cease doesn't mean where we keep doing it, just not as much, right? Cease means stop. It's like no more. This anger is not acceptable. That I don't want to do it anymore. And forsake wrath. It's kind of the thing that if wrath was over here, we say, okay, I'm getting as far away from you as I can get. I don't want you around anymore. That we, it's kind of the thing is that you think of it sometimes. You can have, say, as a family, you're going on a trip in the car and you're driving each other crazy and you're tempted to leave one of your kids at the side of the road so that then you can have peace for the rest of the drive, right? But more instead, what the idea is you stop the car and you forsake wrath. You leave wrath at the side of the road and then you as a family can go on and have peace. And so that's kind of the picture of it. It's not the people, it's not like, oh, I take these people out of my life and then I'll be okay. It's like, no, I need to take wrath and anger out of my life and then I'll have all these people that we can get along. And so that's what we want to think about in those terms. Ephesians chapter 4 as well gives different thoughts, and I just wanted to share some of them as well. Where it says, Ephesians 4, it says, verse 26, "Be angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil." That it gives that thought that as we feel that anger coming up, we need to deal with it right away so it doesn't lead us into doing what's wrong. And let not the sun go down in wrath, we need to deal with it as quickly as possible. We don't want it to linger. And then it says, verse 31, "That all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." And so we see bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, evil speaking, and malice, all of that needs to be put away. It isn't like, well, okay, well, most of it I need to put away, but some of it is still okay. No, it says all anger. It says I need to get rid of that in my life because it's going to cause a lot of trouble. And so we want to think, how do I do that? So just these are just basic ideas, and there's a lot of, that you can kind of meditate on them in that, but just kind of lay them out, and that way they can be kind of stepping stones for you. So first off is we need to acknowledge anger. We need to refuse to excuse it. That we say, okay, I am dealing with this in a wrong way. This is an overreaction. This is causing problems. And yes, maybe there's different things that triggered it, but I have to take personal responsibility myself for this. And that's where we start. But then secondly, it's the idea that we need to humble ourselves. If pride is generally the main cause of our anger, the way of dealing with it is humbling ourselves. And so we understand, first of all, we need to humble ourselves before God. 1 Peter 5, verse 5, is humble ourselves. God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble, right? We need grace. We need God's help. So we need to humble ourselves before the Lord. We say, Lord, I need your help. Please forgive me for what I've been doing and help me to have victory. And so we humble ourselves before God, but we also humble ourselves before our family. We can do this in a couple different ways. One is that we make ourselves accountable to our family for our anger. That we say to them, okay, I realize I have a problem with it. I want to get victory over it. Can you help me? Can you identify when I'm getting angry? Because it's kind of the thing is that we don't want to, like, that's sometimes what we think of is like, I just don't want to get violently angry. But I think our family says, well, I'd rather not you not get verbally abusive either. I'd rather that you don't even have really kind of that spirit of anger, because our family can sometimes just see our countenance change, and they just see, okay, he's struggling, and so you want to be made aware of that before it gets down worse. And of course, that's difficult because and for a family, you have to be careful because you don't want it to be where a person is excusing their behavior just because someone's getting angry either. But it's just, you want to get that help. You want to become a team in dealing with it rather than be just stirring up more trouble. And the thing is as well, that phrase in Ephesians 4 verse 26, which says, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. When we have gotten angry, we need to make it right away. That we don't let it linger. That if we have had disagreements in the day, we need to try to get that right before you go to bed so that you can start the next day fresh. That you aren't still dealing with past disagreements. So thirdly, we want to develop discretion. Develop discretion. So this is Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 11. It says, the discretion of man deferreth his anger, and his glory to pass over transgression. And so discretion is the idea is where you can kind of, you look at a situation and you kind of say, okay, how should I respond in this situation? And it's kind of with anger, especially, okay, is this the time or the place for me to react in this way, right? And you can think of it in that way. It's like if you're in the middle of a public place and you're throwing a temper tantrum, like you're embarrassing yourself, right? And so you realize, okay, this is not the time or the place. You wouldn't do that in front of your boss, right? You know you'd get fired if you did it. And so you kind of sense that. It's like, okay, well, if it's not okay in public, if it's not okay in front of your boss, it's not okay in private, it's definitely not okay in front of your family. They're the people that should get the best of you, not the worst of you, right? And so it's kind of thinking about that. Okay, this is not the time or the place to get angry, so I just need to cool down. And the idea of defer means to prolong, to push off to a later time. And so it's kind of the thing with anger is a lot of times it wells up. But if we can get to this thought, okay, this upsets me, but I'll deal with it later. A lot of times if we defer anger, if we push it off to later to deal with it, when we've given time to actually think about it rationally, we realize, wait a minute, this really wasn't worth getting angry about. And so then that allows us to cool it off. And so that's the thing is that if we learn not to react right away and instead say, okay, I'm just going to deal with this when I'm in a calmer frame of mind and I can speak rationally and with myself being under control, then that's, yes, there might be discussion and things that need to happen, but it doesn't need to happen in the heat of the moment. Let me wait. And when we wait, then probably 9 times out of 10 we'll realize, oh, why am I getting upset? This wasn't really worth it. And it's that thought, it's his glory to pass over transgression. That someone's done us wrong, but we realize, hey, I'll just let this go because this is not worth fighting over. That they give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they didn't mean anything by it. Maybe they weren't thinking. Maybe they're having a bad day. And so I don't need to demand my rights, demand that they make this right, I can just let this go by. But then as well, it's the thought of walking in the Spirit rather than in the flesh. And we see this in Galatians chapter 5. And this is really the key principle, because when we're trying to control our anger, right, it's like it's self trying to control self. It's, I don't know if you've ever had the experience where you say you're struggling with willpower. You bought yourself 5 chocolate bars and you want to eat them all at once. And you think, well, I have to resist doing this. And so you're going to hide them around the house. And so that'll help you out of sight, out of mind. But of course, you know where all they are, right? And so in a moment of weakness of willpower, what's going to happen? You're going to go to every single hiding place and eat all the chocolate bars, right? Self doesn't control self very well, right? It's like putting the fox in charge of the chickens. It's not going to work. And so what we understand is that I need more than myself to control myself. I need God to help me control myself. And that's why God has given us the Spirit within us to help us to control ourselves. And so that's what he says, that we're to walk in the Spirit so we're not fulfill the lust of the flesh. And it talks about the work of the flesh, and it lists different things. But some of it, what it lists is hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, different things like that. That these are anger that's produced, and that's the works of the flesh, right? But it says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. That's the thing. When we develop those things, when we love someone, we're not going to want to get angry with them and hurt them by our actions, right? That we want to show kindness to them. When we have joy, true joy in life, we can have things happen and it doesn't ruin our day, because it's like, I'm still having a great day. I'm not going to let this ruin that, right? When we have long suffering, that we can, even though people might irritate us and might provoke us, it just, we're patient with them. We're not quick tempered. We don't have a short fuse. We just say, okay, it's going to be fine. I can endure this. This doesn't bother me. That idea of gentleness, that we're not being harsh, we're not being critical, not jumping on someone, that we can just calm down, that we're meek. Meekness has the idea that we can bear up under injuries and provocations, that we can have grace under fire. We can treat people in such a way that there's not all that friction. And then temperance, of course, is the idea of being, having ourselves under control, and that we're not having all this fight. And so all of this, it doesn't come from us trying to work it up, self trying to control self. It's where we have God's Spirit within us, and he's giving us these abilities to respond to things in the proper way. And so as we learn to deepen our relationship with God, as we learn to walk in the Spirit rather than the flesh, then that's when we're truly going to have victory over our anger. And so finally, we see, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. And that's what we want to get to, that that we can look at ourselves as being physically strong, but what really shows our deep personal strength is that when we can get to a point where we can control our anger, that really shows our true character, when anger is brought under control. And so that's what we want to do, to be able to rule our spirit. And of course, we can't do it alone. We need God's help. And so with God's help, we can learn to gain freedom from anger. And as we take the necessary steps to overcome our anger for the sake of our families, it has a very good result. And you kind of, in your notes, when you look at the damaging effects of anger, that really you can take that and kind of see the opposite of those things is what's going to happen as a result of you dealing with your anger, right? That what's going to happen? It's going to reduce friction. It's not going to be causing strife. It's going to actually be reducing strife, right? Instead of causing people to disrespect you, controlling your anger causes people to respect you, because most people can't control their anger. I remember one fellow I did a job for, and it was just kind of interesting how it happened. I didn't even think of anything at the time. What it was is we went to put this door in, and it didn't fit in the hole. So I had to do a bunch of fiddling around and fixing in the doorway to get it so that it would fit. And the guy, he mentioned to his wife that he was just really surprised, because he said, well, if I would have been doing the door, I just would have started swearing and cussing that it wasn't fitting and getting mad. And he said, well, he just kind of looked at it, stood back, and then figured out what to do and did it, and then put the door in. And that was surprising to him. And that's the thing. When we learn to do that, people aren't used to that. And so it is an amazing thing when they see that. But as well, it restores relationships. When we're angry, it pushes people away. When we're able to control our anger, it draws them close. It knows, I know I can trust you. I know you're not going to get out of control. You're not this Jekyll and Hyde type of personality where you're kind the one minute and then nasty the next. You're consistent, and that makes me want to trust you. And as well, it promotes healing. Because, yes, maybe we did have a problem with anger, but when people see that we've taken the steps to deal with it, then they say, okay, I'm safe now, everything's okay, and now we can heal and get over some of those bad experiences of the past and move forward in a deeper relationship than we had before.